Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At our microphones today is Carolyn Harper. Carolyn is the Chief of Staff of the Mayor's Office in Philadelphia. She's in the Chief of Staff of the Mayor's Office on Reentry. And we have Dr. Keith Leapart, and he is with the Lenfest Foundation. He's on loan from the Lenfest Foundation to the City of Philadelphia. And to Carolyn and to Keith, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
And before going on with the show, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to remind everybody that we are now up to 88,500 hits and listeners on a monthly basis. We appreciate your input. One of the things that I want to get across to everybody is that we respond to all emails. We respond to all suggestions and incorporate those suggestions into the show. And you can leave us messages on our website and access the program and leave messages via a direct email to me or to the comments section. And after that introduction and that little bit of a commercial, we're back to Carolyn and Keith. Carolyn, why are you here in the District of Columbia?
We came down to D.C. to observe the CSOSA, which is your Court Services and Offender Services Supervision Agency, and also to meet with some of the entities in Washington, D.C. that are doing reentry work. Mm-hmm. We're trying to learn some of the best practices, the documented evidence that we've seen in the past and their participation in Ready for Work. We want to just observe that and incorporate what might work in Philadelphia.
Okay. What's happening in Philadelphia at the moment in terms of reentry?
The mayor has made reentry a major part of his administration.
Right.
And as a part of the mayor's office, we're looking at how we can increase public safety and reduce recidivism through an actual managed reintegration network of services.
Do you have citizen support, do you think, business support across the board, or is this just coming from the mayor's office?
No, I believe that the citizens are supporting it because they understand that we have over 14,000 individuals returning to Philadelphia, and we want to make them an actual viable part of the community. In order to do that, we have community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, and most importantly, the people of the community supporting the mayor's efforts on this.
Because, you know, it is interesting. You go throughout the country, and getting citizen support is probably one of the hardest things. We within the criminal justice system believe in this. We believe that reentry is possible and doable, and either through a moral investment or through a criminological investment in terms of cutting back on rates of crime, making the city safer, or from an economic investment so taxpayers don't have to pay that much to operate the correctional system. There's all sorts of issues on the table where we in the system and criminologists throughout the country support the reentry concept. But one of the things that I found is in a lot of cities, the average citizens aren't supporting it. Their view of people coming back from prison is probably far down on the list. They're going to say, let's support schools, let's support the elderly, let's support lots of programs, but their support for offenders seems to be way down on the list. And is that any different in Philadelphia?
I think that people in the community understand that if we continue to spend money on sending people to prison and not spend the money on helping them reintegrate back in the community, that it's money wasted. And we understand that by helping them reintegrate, we also have to help them with the education and the literacy piece. Mm-hmm. We have to help them with the workforce development piece. We have to help them really reintegrate back into society as productive taxpaying citizens, and that therefore our economy will be increased and the budget will be increased in terms of the revenue that comes in because they'll be contributing to the taxpaying base.
Okay, Dr. Keith Leapart, I'm going to go over to you for a second. Basically, the same questions. You're with the Lenfest Foundation. You're on loan to the City of Philadelphia. What do you think is happening in the City of Philadelphia in terms of broad-based support for prisoner reentry? Again, one of my favorite questions is how do we gain the support of citizens? Because I don't find a lot of citizen support for reentry. I find it way down on the list. I find it a hard sell when we're going out there, when a day and age of limited dollars, if people don't want the taxes raised, I go out and I say, you know what, it's in our collective best interest to provide mental health treatment while in prison, while in the community. Now, who's going to argue with that? Mm-hmm. Who's going to argue with providing mental health treatment? I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. Nobody's going to argue with providing mental health treatment. But then again, where's the money coming from? Mm-hmm. So isn't that the heart and soul about what we're talking about? We sort of know what to do in terms of what the research tells us, but we lack the political will for the money.
I think part of it, and just to answer your question, I think it's a great time in Philadelphia in regards to the support in the areas of reentry. The mayor has come in and made public safety a major piece of his platform, and people such as Jerry Lenfest, who is the chairman and founder of the Lindfest Foundation, who was a wealthy businessman in the city, have jumped on board and decided to support the mayor's vision. Mayor Nutter is someone who has great respect within the business community, so they have expressed a willingness to support anything that he wants to do, and he has made this one of his top three priorities or top three asks of the business community as far as opening up their doors.
So the business community recognizes that this is a priority.
They recognize that this is a priority. Of course, there's still work to do, but they recognize because everywhere he's at, he's making this a major focus of his administration. And what he has done by restructuring the government and now creating a deputy mayor for public safety, he is now placed under the deputy mayor for public safety, the police, probation and parole, public defender's office, the district attorney's office, the mayor's office of reentry. This allows for much better communication across the board for all these agencies. And so, you know, we have began to really put together our plan, and they've said to us, we want you to go out and learn about best practices all around the country. We want you to visit, you know, the New Yorks, the DCs, the Memphises, the national models, and the opportunity to come and sit here and learn has been great. From a citizen standpoint, I think the citizen support is there. The recent statistic came out that, you know, that Philadelphia has the highest incarceration rate per capita in the country.
Really?
For every 100,000, 602 people in the city are incarcerated, which means it's a broad problem, which means that, you know, typically your neighbor or you or your family member has been affected.
There's a connection somewhere down the line. There's a connection to people being inside of the criminal justice system. And what does that mean in terms of the larger society? Because the question I always ask is two questions. Who do you want to occupy that prison bed? Do you want the rapist? Do you want the robber? Do you want the violent person hurting other people? Or do you want a nonviolent offender? That's a choice for society to make. I'm not going to tell society what choice to make in terms of who occupies that prison bed, but personally, I'd rather see the person who is truly a danger to society occupy that prison bed. And number two, how do you want them to react when they get out? I have never quite understood, and that's why I always go back to mental health treatment, because nobody can argue with it, that the person coming out of the prison system, coming back into our communities, if he has a mental health issue that's not treated, the probability of him hurting or bothering other people or costing taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars more goes up beyond calculation if it left untreated. So I understand there's a certain controversy with drug treatment. I understand there's a certain controversy with everything that we do and everything that we touch in terms of trying to make a case for offenders. But nobody's going to argue with drug treatment. Carolyn, we're going to go back to you. One of the things that that Keith said about the support of the business community, at these microphones, just a couple weeks ago, we had the people from the National Home Builders Association, and they made the same point, interestingly enough. Here's the National Association of Home Builders who are coming in and basically saying, we train ex-offenders. Well, I'm saying, why do you train ex-offenders? You're all supposed to be out there putting up homes. What does putting up homes have to do with ex-offenders? And they said, we need the workers. Our workforce is getting older, and we need new people to come in. And so we want to train people called up in the criminal justice system to come and build homes for us.
Right.
That was a piece of support from the private sector that, that quite frankly, I did not expect. I didn't think anybody cared about these issues beyond the professionals in the fields and the advocates. So Keith saying the business community support up there. You want to talk about that?
Yes. Recently, last month, we actually had our first annual summit, and it was employer focus. We had over 143 companies actually attend because of their interest in looking at a program that would allow the labor market to build capacity for some of the very same things that you're saying. The employment field right now is open, and there's not enough people to fill it. So what we're doing in Philadelphia is to understand what the economy is asking for, our workforce development and job readiness training for formerly incarcerated persons is geared towards the labor market. So we're not training them to be, for instance, maybe accountants, when what we need are carpenters. The market
and
needs
isn't that
carpenters.
Amazing? Because they can earn a heck of a living. We place a lot of people here in the commercial driver's license program. And you know what? I mean, okay, they dropped out of high school. in the ninth grade, and they've done a couple stretches in prison. And they go out and get their CDL, and they're making $60,000 a year. I mean, we're not talking about entry level. We're talking about a real good, solid living wage with benefits.
And that's because that's what they need. So if we prepare them and we train them according to the demands of the marketplace, then we put them in a better position. The last thing we want to do is train them for something that is obsolete, and then they get finished with the training, and we can't place them in a job.
Right. So. But do you think, and let me ask you a broader philosophical question that applies to Seattle, Philadelphia, Canada, England, Australia, it doesn't matter. Do you think that we in society, do you think it's Philadelphia in particular, will ever come to grips with the holistic approach that is necessary? I mean, we are talking about more than just a couple dollars. 50% of offenders, according to national research, are now claiming mental health problems. Now, before, it was a 16% was the diagnosable figure. We were saying between 12 and 16% have diagnosable mental health issues. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their own self-assessments, over 50% are claiming mental health problems. Substance abuse, easily 70 to 80% of people having substance abuse histories. Educational deficiencies, the mm-hmm. overwhelming majority of dropouts. Job training, the overwhelming majority don't have job backgrounds or steady job backgrounds or a marketable skill that they can take, a portable skill that they can take. Now, those are four things right there that are enormously expensive. To come out and provide mental health treatment, to come out and provide drug treatment, to come out and provide job skill training and placement, and to come out and I forgot whatever the fourth one was. But, I mean, that's a package that mm-hmm. should happen when they're incarcerated and should continue in the community when they're released. Virtually every criminologist in this country would buy into what I've just said, but that's enormously expensive.
Well, I would let Dr. Leaphart talk about the mental health issues, but I would say that we will pay for it one way or the other. I think the most important thing is that we realize the cost of incarcerating someone at over $30,000 on average, say in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania, and the cost of providing them with mental health or providing them with literacy training or providing them with job skills.
Well, I'm sorry, it was the literacy part of it. It was
right.
The educational part
the
of it.
The educational part of it. I think if we provide those services, then in the long run, we do reduce the expenses to the economy. And I think that the other part of it is that you'll see more and more correctional facilities providing pre-release training and allowing that to take place in the prisons behind the walls as opposed to just waiting until they come out. But I will let Dr. Leaphart speak on the mental health issues.
Okay. Keith, you want to take a whack at that? And then I have a follow-up question for you, not necessarily on mental health, but this broader philosophical stuff that we all struggle with. The mental health part?
Well, the important thing is just when you talked about resources and the cost of it, the fact is that, you know, there is money spent on mental health that may not be directly geared towards ex-offenders, but if you did the reverse and said, this mental health money that we're spending, how many people are being serviced by the Department of Behavioral Health, say in Philadelphia, how many of those individuals, adult people, are ex-offenders? And then you can look at the rationale and saying that, you know, and I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure it's a significant portion. If we're saying 50% of these individuals inside of the prison diagnose themselves with having mental health issues, and then on the outpatient side, they may not be coming directly to the mayor's office of reentry for mental health services, but they may be receiving those services independently. So we need to, the point I'm getting to, we need to coordinate the resource distribution and saying that, listen, money is being spent for mental health issues, and if 25% of the mental health patients also have a criminal background, then we need to find out ways to streamline those services and the resources and the funding streams to help support the mayor's of reentry and other ex-offender related, you know, industries.
The difficulty in that is that so many people in the social service industry don't like our offenders.
But they're still treating them. I mean, you may not like them.
But the degree of treatment becomes a critical issue. I mean, there's a certain point where we say, And we firmly believe, all three of us sitting in this room firmly believe that, you know, educational, helping the person get their GED, helping the person getting their plumbing certificate, helping the person dealing with their mental health problems, and helping the person in terms of substance abuse. When I worked for the Maryland Department of Public Safety, which was both law enforcement and corrections, the public safety secretary asked me to personally intervene with the employment people and the unemployment people. And with the rationale of you know, they're servicing our folks anyway, our offenders. So what's the deal? I mean, what's the big deal? If they're going to service our offenders anyway, why can't they devote specialized people to do that? And their response was, sure, we'll put up the specialized people to help you, to give you those individualized services that you say that you need and which most offenders do need. I don't think many offenders take well to standing in line for 3 hours at a time waiting for services. And I think people need to be aware of the unique needs of offenders. But they said, we'll do that for you at the cost of $7 million a year. I didn't have $7 million. So that concept of redistributing services is tough because, quite frankly, they don't love our offenders. I had a person in the District of Columbia tell me, Leonard, if I had a choice between a woman who's strung out in cocaine with three kids and one of your guys coming out of the prison system, I'm going to help the woman with three kids because your guy's going to give me a rough time. Your guy's going to recidivate, and it's going to be taking two or three events. This woman is ready for change, and she's got three kids, so I'm going to help her. So part of it is the complexity that offenders bring to us, or bring to any of us in the criminal justice system anywhere in the country.
I don't think it's just the complexity of an ex-offender, what they bring to you. I think it's the overall, what you talked about, the holistic issues. It's not the ex-offender is complex. It's the fact that, you know, they don't have jobs. They don't have tangible skills. They were probably poorly educated growing up. Now they've entered the prison system and they come out and, you know, they're now trying to get into the workforce. When they come out, they're very well-intended in saying, I want to go to work. I want to do right. I am.
That's been my experience.
Right. I've changed my life. I want to do right.
That's been my experience.
Then they go through the system and there's a stigma attached with them being an ex-offender. And you just articulated from the standpoint of the service provider, from the mental health provider, the stigma of saying, I would rather deal with a woman with three kids than an ex-offender. It's going to be displayed that way in their interaction. So the ex-offender probably feels that and then rebuts. And at the same time, where they're working on their mental health issues, they're also looking for employment. And they have that stigma and being turned away then. So
that's what they tell me.
There are a bunch of issues around. So I don't.
That's what they tell me. And we had in Maryland the boot camp program, and where they were provided with their GED and provided with drug treatment and provided with their plumbing certificate or job occupational training. And I was talking to a couple. This is like 6 months after getting out of boot camp. And I'm sorry, 3 months. And they basically said, you know, if I got to go through one more rejection, you know, there's no problem with me becoming a plumber's assistant. You know, I've got the skills, I've got the training. Yeah, I screwed up, but, you know, if I don't start getting some respect from somebody, I'm going to go back. And I've heard that over and over and over again. It's just not the services or the availability of services. It's the understanding of people who provide those services and understanding from employers that they may want to give this person a second look or a third look. If it's not a security issue, why not? A lot of these people do want to make that break. The question is has been posed to me by a lot of offenders, and we've put a lot of offenders up on this program that we supervise and some office supervision. The question becomes, how much disrespect can you take? That's basically what they're telling me before they simply give in and go back and cost us as taxpayers an additional $100,000 or $200,000 plus the fact that they victimized another human being. Isn't that the question, Keith?
Well, I think part of the way we need to look at the assessment or the risk of an ex-offender, it's to me similar to a credit score. Someone who, when I was in college, I did some things, got some credit cards, messed up my credit score. It was pretty low. So, you know, over time, with me paying my bills on time and, you know, being more responsive financially and 7 years passing and these things dropping off my credit report because I somewhat stayed out of trouble financially, mm-hmm. now I have a good credit report. Banks don't look at me the same as they did 7 years ago.
Right.
Where at Sofinders, you do something 17 years ago, that still carries the same weight, you know, 17 years later as it did when you came out of prison. And it shouldn't be that way. You've been clean for 17 years. You've been, you know, you're in your church, you're in your mosque or wherever you worship. You're a good person in the community. And they're still looking at you the same way.
Right.
We really need to really reevaluate the way we risk stratify someone as a risk to public safety.
But every time that person turns on the evening news, every time that person reads the newspaper, every time that person puts on the radio and listens to radio news, it's a story about somebody doing somebody terrible. And when you say ex-offender, that's what comes across in their mind. What they read in the newspaper, what they see on the television. This is one of the hardest gigs I've ever had. I've done McGruff the Crime Dog years ago. I've done burglary campaigns. I've done robbery campaigns. I've done carjacking campaigns. But in terms of former offenders, people have a stereotype. An ex-con, and you're right, Keith. That label stays with you forever. At the same time, I had a guy at these microphones just a short time ago, a former offender doing very well, who talked about his anger towards service people who provide services to him. He could tell instantly who cared about him and who didn't care about him. And he simply said that too many people in this industry, if you will, who are there to serve former offenders, don't care about you, and they let you know they don't care about you. Carolyn, you want to take a shot at that? Because that's a pretty difficult question, because it gets beyond. First, we have to provide the services, and secondly, we have to provide services that are geared towards former offenders for this to work.
Okay, I would like to answer two of your questions.
Go ahead.
The first one, when we talk about the label that's associated with being an ex-offender, I think it's also how you position it. Let's talk about employment. If I was, I think Clark Construction is one of the big construction companies here in D.C.
Yes, they hire a lot of former offenders.
They're looking for 100 laborers and not necessarily 100 people that are formerly incarcerated. So if I can present to them 100 men and women that can lift 75 pounds, that know how to take orders, that know will be on time, that come with wraparound services, knowing that they're going to be randomly drug tested, so less likely to be indulging in drugs. They're concerned about, can I get 100 people that can do this job?
Right.
So when, as the job development and a reentry program, I'm not selling an ex-offender. I'm offering you some labor. And so we look to build capacity and not do it based on labels. Once we get away from labeling people, then I think we have a better shot at being more successful and helping them succeed and not allowing them to fall back on a label as a crutch. But we have to, it's a mindset change. You have to change the mindset. As far as it relates to supportive services, one of the things that I'm excited about in Philadelphia that we're doing out of the Mayor's Office for Reentry is that we are going to be credentialing service providers. So we're going to look at the organizations that provide mental health and substance abuse treatment and transitional housing, and we're going to task them with a certain standard so that if we recognize that they're treating our individuals wrong because they're ex-offenders, as opposed to being a service provider that's addressing the issues that they have, regardless of their circumstances or regardless of the fact that they were formerly incarcerated, then we're not going to credential them. We're going to go in and we're going to do our due diligence on how do they perform? What are the services that they're providing? There's an expression that a lot of people use, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the radio, but there are a lot of poverty pimps out there, organizations that call themselves service providers that are not providing quality service.
Right.
So in Philadelphia, under the mayor's new structure in terms of the mayor's office of reentry, we are actually going to go out and do this due diligence and investigate those service providers that are wanting to do business and provide mental health or substance abuse and say that you are a quality organization that provide the service, and we're going to look for their performance and how they perform. So we're excited about that. That's one of the major things that we're going to be doing in Philadelphia, and we're really, really excited about what that outcome will look like.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up a little bit. One of the things I want to get to in all of this is that we've talked about the fact that within Philadelphia, you've got the support of the mayor's office. And what will be the benefit? Dr. Keith, we do all these things. We discuss all these things about the mayor, the fact that the mayor supports this initiative, the fact that the business community supports this initiative. There's a sense that the citizens of the city supports the initiative. We talked about the complexity of the initiative, and we talked about service providers and the fact that it's just not entirely simple. We have attitude towards ex-offenders. Some of them are quite justified. Some of them, quite frankly, are not. I'm not going to preach to people in terms of what it is they should believe. I do believe that people should consider this because it's in their best interest. Because if we put this whole package together, if we really provide comprehensive services, what happens?
It's an overall effect. It starts off with a stronger family unit because we have employed men, which lead to stronger neighborhoods, which leads to a stronger city and a safer community, a
less
safer
crime.
Philadelphia.
Does
less
it mean
crime.
Less crime?
Definitely.
That fewer people are victimized.
Safer streets. People. The mayor often says and always says, people who are working and are tangibly employed are not apt to commit crime.
Okay, so it is fewer crimes, and in the final analysis, it is fewer tax dollars spent on people who get caught up in the criminal justice system, correct or incorrect?
And instead of spending almost a quarter of the $4 billion budget in Philadelphia on public safety issues, mm-hmm. we can take and transfer some of that money into education. If there's less crime and less need to spend those resources, we can transfer those to education, mental health, those other things that we talked about earlier.
You're hearing that from governors all throughout the United States that are now spending more money on corrections than colleges, and they would like to have additional money to spend on the colleges rather than corrections because of that. So that's why they're doing reentry. A very interesting discussion. I really hope that you all have a pleasant stay in Washington, D.C., and I hope that you come back to us and discuss what's happening in Philadelphia at some time in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Our guests today are Carolyn Harper, Chief of the Staff of the Mayor's Office on Reentry, and Dr. Keith Lapart. He is from the Lenfest Foundation on Loan to the City of Philadelphia. Again, ladies and gentlemen, it's 88,500 hits a month to DC Public Safety. If you have any suggestions for us, we would love to hear them. Please have yourselves a very pleasant day.